We went out to dinner the other night. Dinner at Bruna's on Oakley. We were meeting our friends Tom Serafin and his wife Ann, the former TV news producer. They're great people. And Luciano at Bruna's had a street full of tables. I wonder if you've ever been there. It's just a great old Chicago street. I guess you'd call it quaint. Location scouts for films would call it quaint. It's nice. The food's good. The street was full of tables. It was a beautiful evening. And as we got out, you know, we left our car with the car park. We walked past the one table, first table. And there he was, Boss Madigan. And sliced apples weren't on his menu. He was a perfect gentleman, as always. Smiled shyly and stood up to say hello to Betty and to me. Shook hands. He gave Betty an elbow, you know, one of those COVID elbow touches. She laughed. They let any Sox fan in here, don't they? I said. Yeah, it was kind of lame. It was a bit awkward, but it was okay. Like I said, Betty thought he was a gentleman, and he was. You know, the thing about Madigan, he's always gracious and polite to people he meets, especially to waiters. I've seen it. I've seen it at Palermo's. I've seen it elsewhere. Vendors at the Sox games. That's how you know about people. You watch how they treat other people, especially if they're a big shot. How do they treat the waiter? Look, Boss Madigan and I are not buddies. You know that, and he knows that. I've been calling him the Khan of Madiganistan since the beginning of time. And the feds are all over him in that far-reaching investigation. He knows that, too. We didn't eat together or anything. He was waiting for his daughter, Lisa, and her husband, and their kids. And there were a few other people I knew there, too, at Bruna's. It's a great place, a Chicago place, one of my favorites. And I'm glad I got there to see Luciano. I've already been to JC's Pub to see Joe Sestero a couple times already in Countryside. And I've really got to get out to Brondeal and see Carrie Nahabedian. Her Aunt Helen is the queen of the broken glass jello. She's probably the best chef in Chicago, and I just want to take the boys and Betty there. I want the boys to see or to taste what a meal from a great artist is like. And then JC's restaurant out on LaGrange Road to see John Georges, who texted me the other day to say he had a 25-pound grouper with a big head for good fish soup. I used to write my column almost every day at a booth at J.C. George's on LaGrange Road. Seems like a long time ago now. And Jimmy Benakis out at Juicio's in Downers Grove. Jimmy and I once joked around about opening rib restaurants together. They're really good people and good cooks, hard workers, entrepreneurs, visionaries. Carrie Nahabedian is one of the great artists in the country. She doesn't work with paint. She works with food. And as artists and as businessmen and women, they're all up there on the high wire alone, without a net, risking their own money, everything they've got, trying to survive in business in this COVID lockdown state where Pritzker politics and taxes and regulations kill small businesses. I mentioned Madigan because, well, one of the guests today, actually two, the Tribune's great reporter Jason Meisner, my old leg man, who's done such good work on the expansive federal investigation into corruption that stretches from Chicago to Springfield, and that federal bus being driven by RICO. And Attorney General William Barr telling me the other day he wants U.S. Attorney John Lausch to keep hunting crooked politicians here. Jason Meisner is a guest. Legislators plan on holding a special committee hearing in Springfield about corruption. And they want to call witnesses. Yeah, really? You're really serious? Okay. We'll give them a few witnesses today and bring you all up to speed. Wings, that's what I call Jason. Wings, on account of those superb Louisville bourbon wings that he makes. Put out a great tweet on the news about the public hearings. Here it is. Quote, the sheer number of criminal defense attorneys that will be required to hold their hands over microphones and whisper at these hearings boggles the mind. And of course, who are you thinking of? Robert Duvall with Michael Corleone. Yeah, we got Buffa's. We got Buffa's state rep, senator, state senator. Our other guest is retired Judge Sheila O'Brien. She had plenty to say in my column about Cook County boss Tony Taxwinkle and Braveheart Tim Evans muscling Judge Tooman to protect Kim Fox. If there's anything that's wrong with Chicago and its politics, it's that. Judge O'Brien will have more to say here. Because Preckwinkle is a boss now. Yeah, she's liberal. Yeah, she's progressive. Yeah, she checks all the liberal progressive boxes, but she's a boss just like the other bosses of old. And she thinks she's going to make judges. Because controlling judges, like controlling the Chicago Board of Election Commissioners, is the key to power. The real judge maker for decades was Mayor Richard J. Daley. The real Daley, I call him. Not, you know, Mayor Fredo, his son. The real Daley. And after the real Daley, the judge picking was done by Democratic committeemen, by Boss Madigan, Mike Madigan, and by Eddie Burke of the 14th Ward, and by whoever the old mobbed up 1st Ward put on the, you know, at the table. That wasn't the real judge picker. They were just the one that was told to carry the paper. But then later, the federal heat was too hot on the 1st Ward, the mobbed up 1st Ward, and the feds busted it up, and the 1st Ward judge picking duties was handled off to its satellite operation, the 36th Ward, on the northwest side of Chicago. This 36th Ward of Democratic committeeman Sam Pastries Banks. Yeah, why is it always food with me? I hate freaking pastries, Sam would tell people. Why does Cass call me pastries? Damn it! Well, Sam, and you're dead, Sam. But, well, there's a story here. There's always a story. I don't put everything, you know, in the paper. I don't write about everything I know. And the story involves a baker, a hardworking baker who wanted his son to become a judge. And the legend has it that Sam Pastries Banks liked the special cannoli. And so he made a box of the special cannoli for Sam, who hates pastries. But like I said, Sam's dead now, so what's the point? Jeff Carlin is here, my friend and co-host and the WGN executive producer who cleans up the tape and drops in odd sound like Johnny Rocco counting the votes and Attorney General William Barr laughing. And if we sound halfway decent, it's because Jeff makes it so. He's the best radio producer in town. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, a guy living in a Chicago 3-flat. I'm talking to you from the back stoop of the 3-flat right now. I really don't know why I did this. Why did we move here? I really can't figure it. I guess it was for culture and for the restaurants and for the city life, but it's just basically been COVID isolation on the porch. Yes, I'm John Cass, a syndicated columnist for the Chicago Tribune and a member of that newspaper's editorial board. And you? Yeah, you. I'm talking to you. You're out there thinking about that special cannoli for Sam Banks and Boss Madigan on Oakley, probably having the veal too. And Eddie Burke making judges. And Eddie Burke under federal heat. And now a liberal like Tony Preckwinkle, chairman of the Cook County Democrats, progressive, checks all her boxes, you know, all the right liberal attitudes. She's twisting the arms off of Judge Mike Tooman, to keep the other judges in line and protect Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox. I mean, there's something nice about the fact that it's not just the pink guys, the old pink guys in the pinstripe suits, but that black progressives can be just like the pink guys. And you know why that is? For all the virtue signaling BS out there, all the, you know, moral superiority of the liberals, they're just human like everybody else, aren't they? And they protect their friends, and they go up against their enemies, and they use whatever leverage they've got to keep power and control. And that's what it always is, and that's what this podcast is all about. It's about you and how you're dealing with it. Here, now, you're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
And as I promised, our first guest is Jason Meisner, the federal buildings reporter for the Chicago Tribune, a great, great reporter, and my friend and former associate on a column. And the column, we called him Wings because of those Louisville bourbon wings that he makes. They are superb, Jason. But so was the veal chop at Bruna's the other day. When I sat out in the street, you know, they had tables, and who was there but none other than himself, Boss Madigan. Oh,
really? Dining at Brutus?
Yeah. I was hoping he'd be with some lobbyists, you know, but instead he was waiting for Lisa. But it was nice to see him. You've been there.
Did he have the salt in boca?
I don't know. I didn't stay. We didn't dine together, but I did say hello to him. And, you know, he was very gracious, as always. Now, what's the status? I was at the federal building last week and talked to Attorney General William Barr. He wants John Lausch to stay on to keep the U.S. attorney here in Chicago to keep hunting corruption. What's the status of all that? What's going on?
Bring us no dull moment in that endeavor, that's for sure.
No, I mean, we've got any number of things going on, but the biggest, by far, the biggest show in town is you-know-who himself under investigation. A story that we've been reporting on for, well, I think it started last June when we first started hearing about raids of Mike Madigan Associates, Con Ed lobbyists being under investigation. And we were wondering, could they really be going after Madigan? Is that possible? And it sure looks like it now. I don't know how he still says he's not a target of anything, but if you read that ComEd bribery statement of facts, which so they've admitted to all this conduct. I mean, he's public official A, and it's very clear that they're alleging that there was a bribery scheme, that he was, they don't allege any direct participation by Madigan yet, but about as close as you can get, which is Michael McLean, his longtime friend and associate.
And when do they make it all clear to a jury, sooner or later, if they do, that Madigan, their argument will be Madigan was the beneficiary, the public official A referenced in that $150 million scheme at ComEd. Do I have the number right? $150 million?
That's their lowball estimate of ComEd's gains, yeah, from the scheme.
So if I'm a juror in that case, the defense will ask, do you pay an electric bill? Right? I mean, are they gonna, because everybody pays an electric bill, so everybody kicked in for that one. Right.
And to that low ball number too. I mean, that's what they settled on, right? I mean, it's probably, if I know lawyers, it's probably much higher than that when you account to all the crap that goes into it. Like John said, all of us taxpayers and ComEd payers have to foot the bill for much more than $150 million. If I had to estimate,
exactly. I mean, that's like you said, like jurors, that's something that they can understand. Everybody pays the bill every month, and most people think it's too high. So, and then you got this other investigation involving red light cameras, and who hasn't had to pay one of those right on red $100 tickets that they get you for, and turns out there was bribery going on there too. So the big question, though, is obviously everyone always says Madigan is a very careful person, doesn't talk on the phone, has other people do things for him, so there's a, I guess you might say, a buffer. But the big question is Michael McLean, because they recorded his calls for months. They've got him, you know, he hasn't been charged yet, but it sure looks like from what they've revealed. In the
Let's identify him. Who is he? Who is he, Jason? Bring
Michael McLean worked with Madigan in the General Assembly back in the 70s and has been one of his closest friends and confidants. My colleague Ray Long would say, our colleague would say, like part of Madigan's inner circle, who would eat with him down in Springfield. Well, you know, he was at the table with him when Madigan would hold court during, you know, legislative sessions. So guy who had his ear and one of the few guys who would, you know, talk to him on a regular basis about policy and strategy and everything. For years. So for a guy who doesn't talk on the phone like Madigan, it's difficult if you're an investigator to, you know, to get him really talking about anything the traditional way. They would do it through wiretaps. So the big question everybody has been asking is, would Michael McLean flip and start telling investigators, say he'd be willing to testify against Madigan? So far, Michael McLean and everything he said is no way, I'll never do that.
But maybe they don't need him to testify if they have all these tapes. They have others testifying, right? They will, I would assume.
They will, but they need the quid pro quo that Madigan was knew about this and was participating in it. If all they have is McLean orchestrating this bribery scheme to make Madigan happy, if you don't have that participation, then it might be difficult. They're not going to charge a guy like Madigan, as you know, unless they know they got him. So,
I wondered. I asked Barr when he was here, you know, off the record. I said, you know, I figure you guys are going to have something to talk about Springfield. And Lausch was in the room. You know, there were about 12, 15 staffers in this tiny little room where they, you know, where the U.S. attorney tells you what your identity will be when they move you to Salt Lake City, you know, if you're a witness. And Lausch kind of like groaned, you know. But I would assume the attorney general and the U.S. attorney would have something to say to each other about such a high profile and significant political.
Yeah, the head of the Illinois Democratic Party and the longest serving Speaker of the House in U.S. history. That's the kind of thing you got to go to Washington to get approval to investigate anyway. So I'm sure either Bill Barr himself or his direct underlings have given approval for this. So, but you do think about certain federal investigations past those top political figures, like we had the hiring scandal, the patron scandal at City Hall, that kind of stopped because they were going up the chain on that one, the Sorge case.
Yeah, Chris Sorge.
It was good. Yeah, it was good.
Robert Sorge
was he never flipped. He was charged and he went down, but a bunch of people went down with him. But I was talking about Michael McClain flipping, and that investigation stopped essentially once they had gone as high as they could go.
Remember that they had a pizza party for him in the basement of the. What was it? Which church was it? It was the Daly Family Church.
In Bridgeport. Yeah.
In Bridgeport. I wonder what was, did they roll up anything? Did the pizza have any like special pepperonis the way Sam Banks would make a judge and get the special cannoli, you know? I wonder.
Yeah.
And the priest is comparing Zorich to Jesus Christ, remember? Jesus Christ had his legal problems too, John. But that stopped. Yeah, that investigation stopped. I guess if they don't get McClain right now, the common thought is that they don't get anything on Madigan. But it still weakens Madigan, and you're going to have a hearing. That was a superb, to use Jason, one of Jason's favorites, superb tweet you put out the other day when the Illinois General Assembly decided to have a committee hearing on public hearings on corruption.
It was very kangaroo court from the outset.
Right. And Jason said the number of criminal defense attorneys cupping microphones in their hands while their clients will be testifying boggles the mind.
Yeah. Well,
yes, Senator. This committee owes an apology, Senator. Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, you can imagine they were crowing about how they're going to be able to call witnesses to this hearing, but you know they're not going to be allowed to ask any questions or answers. So give answers with this thing going on. So it might not be as illuminating as everybody's hoping. Put it that way.
You know, it will be illuminating. If any of these guys play a game, like call somebody and say, "I'll ask him this," and he said, "You can say that." That would be really stupid because everybody's wired up now. You know, yeah. Mm-hmm. So they want, you know, I mean, it's almost like a bunch of cheese on a trap right now, right?
They should have the hearing in like in a Russian bath or something.
Yeah, exactly. We're all naked. Sure. And hit each other with sticks.
It's good for the pores.
Good for the pores. No stick for you, the woman said to me in Sochi. Listen, Jason, you have another thing going on right now as we're recording this, which is Terry Link. Now, I remember State Senator Terry Link, a confidant of the former state senator, Jimmy, how you doing, DeLeo? And Link got himself jammed up, but he also played a game with you, which really pissed me off. Can you tell our listeners about this little game?
Yeah, he was outed as the cooperating senator when Luis Arroyo, state rep, was charged. In the charging documents, there was a little interesting footnote saying the state senator had been cooperating and wore a wire to trying to get his potential sentence in a tax case. He had some tax trouble trying to get leniency there. So he cooperated. Of course, the senator wasn't named, but it came out that it was Link, and he was down in Springfield. The legislature was in session, and of course, he was asked, "Are you this Senator A or whatever they called him in the document?" And he denied it. He went beyond denying it. He kind of acted like he was offended by the question, and couldn't believe that anybody would say that he was the senator. And of course, months later, it turns out that he was, because they did charge him with the tax charge that was mentioned in the Arroyo charges, and he's set to come in for his initial court appearance and arraignment in about an hour at the Dirksen Federal Building.
You just to, you know, one of the things about a reporter, Jason Meisner, so you know, is a very, very careful reporter and has saved my butt a million times when he was working with me because of his prudence, judgment, and being meticulous about facts. When they started pushing back on you, and there were like little gossip mongers in the media saying, oh, Meisner's wrong, the Tribune is wrong, you know, and you, they're all faceless, nameless little cowards on the internet. How did you take that? Because the bosses supported you clearly, but how did you feel personally?
Yeah, we obviously, you know, John, we never ever would have reported that if we weren't 100% sure that it was him. So I was never worried that it wasn't him. I was wondering. I was kind of taken aback by the senator's vehemence that it wasn't him. When he knew, he must have known that it was going to come out sooner or later that it was. So he was going to look kind of silly, but that was his decision. Maybe something was going on. He had at the time, he was, he was the point man of this whole gambling expansion. And so I'm guessing, but maybe he had some things going on that some moving parts that he didn't want to screw up, and he was trying to stall, basically. But yeah, as far as the rumors, the things people are talking on the internet, I try not to pay attention to that. We were right. I knew we were right. And we weren't the only ones reporting it. The Sun-Times, I believe, reported the same thing. So I try not to pay attention to that.
Yeah, but you broke it and you took the heat for it from all these trolls. But I knew that you were right because you don't put anything in the paper that's not backed. And I appreciate that. So when you're up in the courtroom today, is there court? Like, will he be in court or will it be a Zoom court?
No, he's going to be on video. And I believe the courtroom will be open. So for anybody who wants to go, can go in and see the now former senator, probably be in his lawyer's office. They are getting things up and running at the Dirksen Federal Building. But yeah, most things are being handled by video as long as the defendant agrees to it. So he's charging an information, which means he could plead guilty as soon as today. We don't know. I think we've had a couple recently. Tobolsky, Jeff Tobolsky, the mayor, former mayor of McCook.
Speaking of JC's pub in Countryside, yeah. Right. Yeah.
He was charged and pled guilty days later, and we've had a couple other of those. Omar Mani, the proprietor of your favorite former cigar lounge and in Countryside, he was charged and then pled guilty. So we've had actually he did not plead guilty. He's got a deferred prosecution agreement, Omar Mani, but these things are happening. Like for months, it was all going on behind the scenes. They had executed all these raids, and nobody was getting charged. Now that's changed. We've had at least half a dozen major charges come down.
Right, momentum builds. One of the interesting aspects of the red light camera thing, where Nikki Zoller and her husband were fighting in a PR war, you know, running to the Sun-Times, getting their PR floated, is that the attorney representing them now is not the same attorney who, as U.S. attorney, may have started all this? How does that work? Tell us about that.
Zach Barden represents Safe Speed in civil litigation. Zach Barden, the former U.S. attorney here in Chicago. And I kind of think date-wise, some of this may have started under him, at least going back to the Danny Solis stuff.
I love the Asian girls. Could take
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes, but as far as the Safe Speed stuff, that's a closer call. I'm trying to think of when it might have started. Jack Barden was the one who prosecuted. He was here when they took down the whole Red Flex case, the bribery scandal at City Hall involving red light cameras. So he is not, he knows all about what's going on behind the scenes with some of these companies. So I thought it was interesting that he's representing SafeSpeed. And of course, they have said all along, Nikki Zoller, the CEO, and the company have maintained that Omar Mani, the guy who was running around bribing people, led the charges and a guilty plea, Senator Martin Sandoval, that he was operating kind of like on his own. They had no idea what he was doing. That's their position, and they've not been charged. Nikki has not been charged. So, but we have a whole bunch of cooperating people in that case, including ex-Senator Sandoval. So that one's not over either.
If we had a Chicago Way alarm, not to disparage Attorney Fardin and all, but that's very Chicago Way. That, oh, hey, the guy on the other side is on this side, and hey, how you doing? I just have to note that just for our podcast purposes.
Right. I think I can count at least almost, let's see, five former U.S. attorneys who are no longer prosecutors. They're now on the private criminal defense side, and they are involved. They have clients who they're representing in these ongoing political corruption things. They're still here. They're just
who
working
says
for
we don't
guy.
Have traditions, huh? Absolutely. Well, there's one more case we haven't touched at all. John, I think you've got on your docket.
Yeah. Judge Tooman. How you doing, Judge?
The Toominator.
I love it when I see progressive liberal Democrats who do a lot, and all their friends, some in media, who do a lot of social justice signaling, virtue signaling. They end up being just like the pink guys in the pinstripe suits when it comes to muscling a judge. I love this. It's sort of delicious and sad at the same time. What do you make of it?
I mean, I think it's pretty incredible. Obviously, the mayor came out and said it sure looks like retaliation for what Judge Tooman did in the Jussie Smollett case.
The optics of this are terrible. It looks like retaliation. This is not something that we should have, not in this time, and I'm deeply concerned about it.
Obviously, Kim Fox is a Preckwinkle person, and Judge Tooman kind of showed up to Kim Fox, ripped her behavior, her non-recusal in the Smollett affair. And then he appointed Dan Webb. You could read the tea leaves, but now all of a sudden this judge who's been on the bench for decades and is very well respected, at least everybody I've talked to.
Four decades, 40 years on the bench, right.
Yeah, and is headed up the juvenile justice division for 10 years and is nearing, he's getting on in years, so he's not going to be around for too much longer. And they suddenly have decided that he's not worthy of being backed by the party. So it's just a kind of a strange sudden realization that Judge Tooman is not fit for judicial service.
We're going to get into this later with Judge Sheila O'Brien, but one interesting aspect, Jason, of the Eamon Kelly hatchet job. Eamon Kelly is the committeeman from Evanston, a lawyer, and he put together his report for Tony Preckwinkle on why they shouldn't endorse him. There was a line, I quoted it in the column, basically saying, if he weren't we can't endorse him as long as he's the presiding judge of juvenile. Mm-hmm. And I thought, interesting. It's you have to kind of be crafty when you think about it. But what the Democrats are saying to Tim Evans is dump this guy off the – don't let him be the presiding judge and maybe we could be friends again.
Right. If we just demote him.
Right.
Yeah. There's a whole lot going on there. And then of course we have the Smollett case simmering in the background. Won't go away. Will never go away, possibly. And he's awaiting trial, fighting these charges still to this day, saying he wasn't the one who orchestrated this attack.
And the feds did not? What's the controversy where the city wanted documents and the feds said, no, we can't give them to you because this is still under investigation?
It's an ongoing criminal investigation. Now, that could be the FBI just using that as an excuse to not have to turn over, because there are a lot of questions. Why they investigated this letter that was supposedly sent to Smollett right before he was, and I'm doing air quotes now, attacked.
Yeah.
And the letter had all the same language that his attackers allegedly yelled at him. Had MAGA stuff on it. And you know, postal inspectors and the FBI, when I'm guessing here, I don't know, because we don't know whatever happened to this investigation, but I'm pretty sure they probably figured out very quickly who sent that letter. They probably have video of the person dropping it in the mailbox. But no charges ever came out of that. And so the city wants the FBI's investigative records, because they're now suing Jussie Smollett for the police overtime. And that suit is in federal court. And then we just learned last week that the FBI refused to answer their subpoena for the records. They said, and they called it an ongoing criminal investigation. So we'll see. The judge is supposed to rule on that in a few weeks, but that's a whole other piece that nobody knows kind of where that investigation ended up.
When people say that they don't need newspapers or they get their news from TV, they're obviously, they don't care about all the fine points and all the stuff that we've been talking about, because the only way you get it is by reading the Chicago Tribune. Look for the byline, Jason Meissner, and the Twitter handle, Jason?
At JMETR22B.
If you go on his Twitter account and follow it and read the newspaper, the Chicago Tribune, you'll be able to find out details that you won't ever get on television or, sorry, Jeff, radio, because this is a game, the Chicago way is a game of details and following the map. Miss you, Jason, and Miss Elizabeth and the boys, and this COVID isolation from the back porch of the three flat really sucks, but we'll see you soon, okay? Thanks, Jason.
Thanks a lot, John.
Yeah, that's right, Counselor.
And the head of your family is Michael Corleone.
Yeah, Counselor, Michael Corleone, right.
Did you ever get such an order directly from Michael Corleone?
No, I never talked to him.
Mr. Chichi, could you amplify your answer a bit, please?
Do what?
Could you expand on your answer? I'm particularly interested in knowing, was there always a buffer involved? There's someone in between you and your possible superiors who gave the actual order.
Right, yeah, buffer. The family had a lot of buffers.
And now, as promised, retired appellate justice Sheila O'Brien. And you've heard her before on the podcast. You've read about her in my column and in the Chicago Tribune editorial. She's the one who brought the argument, the motion to Judge Michael Tooman, that she wanted and we needed a special prosecutor to look into how Jussie Smollett was handled by the bumbling Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox. And now we see, as Jason and I and Jeff talked about just a few seconds ago, Tony Preckwinkle and Judge Braveheart Tim Evans putting the muscle on Judge Tooman and denying him, after 40 years on the bench, six terms as judge, denying him the endorsement of the Cook County Democratic Party in the November 3rd election. Sheila, what do you think about what happened?
It's outrageous. It's retaliation. Judge Tooman's correct. He said, I'm being targeted because of this decision. And he is. And so it's outrageous to try to smear Mike Tooman, because he's a terrific judge. But the good thing is that now we see who they really are. They have revealed themselves for being who they really are, not reformers and not people who want to do good things. They actually are just all about themselves. It's all about power, and it's all about them getting their way. And that's corruption. That's what corruption's about.
One thing that reporters and judges and coppers see is that people might virtue signal and might check all their boxes under politics, you know, I'm for this, I'm for that, I'm for green, I love the environment or whatever, climate change. But in reality, they're human beings just like everybody else. And they can be just as venal and corrupt as like the pink guys that we remember with the cigars in their mouth.
Right. And it's the human condition, of course. I mean, this is nothing new. The human condition is people want what they want. But in our democracy, it doesn't work that way. All right, this is democracy, and it's put together with checks and balances, and we try to appeal to the angels in us, that we say there are differing opinions. And look, in the Jesse Smollett case, Mike Tooman didn't rule for me, oh, I'd say 95% of the time. So
he's tough. He was tough on you.
He's very tough on me. And how about this one? If you think about this, nothing bad has happened to Kim Fox except she got a special prosecutor. And this is how they react. It reeks of, we want our way, and we won't allow anybody to touch us. But the big takeaway, however, is if you think about it, nothing bad happened to Kim Fox. A special prosecutor was appointed. She was investigated, but she didn't get charged, didn't get indicted. And none of us still have his report. So this is what they're upset about, that she was investigated. She's a public official. Of course people are going to investigate public officials.
One of the aspects of this kangaroo circus that we're watching from Evans and Preckwinkle against Judge Tooman is the report by Eamon Kelly, lawyer, probably grew up with privilege, from Evanston. And he's the committeeman who wrote the Hatchet Job piece, giving the committee rationale for not endorsing Judge Tooman. And in the report, as I understand it, Mr. Kelly basically makes reference to, and I quoted it in a recent column on this, that as long as Judge Tooman is the presiding judge of juvenile, they can't endorse him. And this brings to me the question, so is Tony Preckwinkle deciding who the presiding judges of the divisions of the Cook County Court will be?
It sure seems like it, doesn't it? One of the interesting things about all of this is the silence of the chief judge. And look, I like Tim Evans, and he's a very generous, nice man. But come on, Tim, where are you? I mean, get out here and defend the judges and the independence of the judiciary. Where are you? Noticeably silent, noticeably absent. It's time for him to step to the plate, I think, as a former judge, and let's defend the independence of the judiciary. But he just doesn't seem to want to do that. So we'll see. We'll see. He's up for, I believe Tim's up for election in 2 years. So it might be time for Eamon Kelly to say that Tim should retire. So let's see what Mr. Kelly does. Mr. Kelly, if you're listening, you need a primer. You need to go back to law school and talk about the independence of the judiciary. What a sad state of affairs, huh?
Mr. Kelly needs to come on the Chicago way to go to school.
Ooh,
because he may have gone to law school. And he may be, as he said, the thing that bothers him is, you know, person of privilege, white privilege, or whatever nonsense he's talking about. But he doesn't know the first thing about how not to be used as somebody else's weapon.
Correct. Stoolie. Somebody else's stoolie. And you want to say to him, Eamon, come have lunch with me. Let me tell you what you're being used. You're being used. Right. But I got to say, you know, if someone had written that about me, and went into my personal background, the way I was reared, to say I shouldn't be endorsed. You know, if somebody says, well, she's Irish, I go over the fence at him. I would. And so for him to talk about Mike Tooman is white and he was a person of privilege, how dare people talk like that? That's just so offensive. You don't know what has gone on in Tooman's background, his life. You don't know. Nobody knows what goes on in other people's lives. Just looking at people and saying, oh, we don't like you because you're Indian, or we don't like you because you're Greek. How dare people talk like that? And I don't know if Eamon Kelly knows it. It happens to be illegal to talk like that.
Well, it's still illegal, Sheila. It's still illegal, but it is the currency of the Democratic Party now. To look, and not only what I find offensive is not only to say, I don't like Greeks and you shouldn't be a columnist because you're Greek, but I find it equally offensive if someone would say, oh, yes, Greeks have more virtue than me, and therefore, why don't you tell me everything I want to know because you have more virtue because of your DNA? I find that to be equally, that is not what our system's about. It is
it's not
ridiculous.
What this country is about, exactly. And for Mr. Kelly, who shares apparently an ethnicity that I share, to talk like that, he ought to be ashamed of himself. Because he, too, if you want to play this game, well, Mr. Kelly, you're from Evanston. You're a person of white privilege, apparently. How dare you talk like that about other people? Because if you can do this to Mike Tooman, then you can do it to African-Americans. You can do it to anybody. You can start saying, well, there's too many women on the bench, or there's too many blacks on the bench. You can just name anybody. And this is the, we need to take this out of our conversation. I thought we did. I thought we took race and ethnicity out of our conversations, but apparently they're back. So it's really,
Judge, there's really, seeking a colorblind society is what I grew up being taught.
Right.
And clearly, one party is not about being colorblind anymore. Now it's the other way around. Now it's everything's about identity and color. But that doesn't, that's a side issue to what the main issue is to me, which is that the message now has been sent to every judge in Cook County. Play ball with Kim Fox because her boss, Tony Preckwinkle, wants you to. And if you don't, we're going to have a committee for you, too.
Well, they did this before. I mean, they took out Matt Coghlan for the same reason. They didn't like how Matt Coghlan was ruling over at 26th Street. Matt Coghlan is a decent, good guy and a good judge. And he was not rolling over and playing dead for Ms. Fox and how Ms. Fox and her standing silent on certain cases. Matt Coghlan apparently was telling the world, wait a minute, I'm not going to be your stoolie. The state's attorney is saying nothing. I still want to hear your evidence. I want to know before I do something what's behind this. That's the thing the public doesn't hear. So the state's attorneys are instructed in certain courtrooms to stand silent. In other words, say nothing and let the defendant get their way, which puts the judge in a trick box because now you're stuck as the judge. You only have one side of the story. And the state's attorney won't give you the other side. So she's not agreeing to things. She's just standing silent. So Coghlan said, no, wait a minute. You might be standing silent. Mr. Defendant, I want to hear what your evidence is. They didn't like that. They said, well, we got to get rid of him because he's making us look bad. Got targeted. And he got kicked off the bench. Now it's happening to Tooman. So this is, they're on the warpath against anybody who is against what they want. And when I say they, I'm saying Kim Fox, Tony Preckwinkle, and Tim Evans. This whole bond situation, same thing. Letting criminals out, you know, on I bonds. I mean, come on. What are we doing here? I mean, and we've seen the result. We have blood in the street.
Judge, I did reference in the column on this subject one Timmy Johnson, convicted felon, repeat gun charges on electronic home monitoring. Thanks, Kim. Thanks, Tony. Thanks, Judge Braveheart Evans. He was on electronic home monitoring, and apparently he wasn't, you know, he was at a party. And at the party, he pulls a gun, fires into a crowd, kills two people, and allegedly wounds three others. Now, this happens every day, and I noticed.
I know.
I noticed that Police Superintendent David Brown, who's got, you know, he works for Lori Lightfoot, and apparently she clearly allows him to go forward, has been attacking the criminal justice system locally, as did William Barr in my interview with him just a few days ago. That you heard here. basically talking about how people who want, liberals who want all this stuff like low bonds and bracelets and so forth for the violent are those who are behind gated communities or live in with security. And the average person in the neighborhoods where these people go back to and pray, P-R-E-Y, don't have that security. They can't buy out. What do you think?
I agree with you. You know, something people don't want to talk about is that the families of defendants are often the victims of defendants. So they're the people who are living with somebody who's violent. They're the ones who get hurt. And they're the ones who have to bond people out. And we're not talking that the defendants are bad people. We're not saying that these people are evil. We're saying that there are certain behaviors that people do that need to stop. So if somebody is hurting another human being, we have to stop their behavior. If they themselves cannot stop their own behaviors, then they have to be separated from the rest of society because they're hurting people. It's not a judgment on them as a person or whether they're, you know, God made them. They are made in God's image and likeness. And yet their behaviors are bad behaviors, and they're often evil behaviors. So those behaviors, if they can't stop them, then we got to separate them from society. That's just that simple. It's very simple. And the families of defendants would many times agree with you on this because they're the victims themselves of it. So that's really the big issue. It's behaviors that need to stop. And whether or not they're bad people, or we should save them, or they should have counselors, you know, that's a whole other issue. We got to stop this crime. It's just got to stop, period. You cannot have this like this.
If you if you break into a gun store and get caught stealing 14 or 15 guns, you're on electronic home monitoring, even the juvenile, and then you walk out and allegedly stab the Walgreens cashier to death in the Walgreens in Wicker Park, allegedly.
Wasn't
or
that
you're
awful?
The or you're the families that, you know, that get shot up by people who should be in jail. I'm not trying to punish them before they're tried, but if you repeatedly have gun felony UUW, repeat, as Brown was saying, and you still get to walk around. I just don't. What I see happening across the country is, and again, I'm gonna mention a name that that will trigger many of my social justice warrior colleagues, but George Soros, the billionaire lefty, has been basically changing criminal justice throughout the country by supporting far left soft on crime prosecutors, and creating this situation throughout. I know they want to silence me, and they're going to say that I'm a bigot, but I know I'm not a bigot. I'm just reporting facts.
Right.
And this thing is beyond control. It's all over the country now. I'd be interested to hear what Jeff has to say about
Jeff,
all this. Jeff?
Jump in here, Jeff. Come on.
Jeff, don't produce your afternoon show while we're talking.
Come on, tell us.
What do you think, Jeff, what do you think in general about the message that's been sent to the judges, play ball with Kim Fox or we'll get you?
Yeah, I mean, the kicker in all of this, like you said before, and even when we were talking to Jason Meisner earlier before, just the idea that the politics are playing this role in something that should be protected, there shouldn't be any politics at all. It should be the idea that justice is justice, and that we're getting caught into these stupid games makes me so sad. And it's really the ultimate Chicago way, as we talked about earlier. Another example of how things, the fix is in, you know, things aren't broken, they're fixed. It's it's terrible. And to the point you made earlier about the defendants, the families of defendants, you know, a lot of times just as scared and worried and afraid for what's going to happen as the victims.
Right. You know, what else really? You have to almost say to Tony Preckwinkle and Amy Kelly, and did you guys not go to kindergarten? I mean, this is so obvious. I mean, if you want to get, okay, you're in kindergarten, you want to get somebody's lunch out of their hands because it's a better lunch than your lunch. I mean, you want them to give you their really cool lunch with, you don't go over and hit them. I mean, you try to get it from them. So really, you want to take out somebody in politics, this is how you do it. I mean, it's pretty hilarious. They just revealed themselves for who they are. Very inept at what they're doing. Not only is it wrong to do this, but they are just terrible politicians. Politics is the art of persuasion. It's not the hatchet job. So Tony couldn't get herself elected mayor as head of the Democratic Party. I mean, come on. Now we're doing this. It's laughable.
I've been to parties. I remember, you know, I've seen judges. Well, let's put it this way. When I was a kid covering politics and steel at the Daily Calumet, I went to a party for the de facto boss of everything, Eddie Vidoljak. He used to have a big barbecue. And there were three bartenders. And he said, "You want a beer?" And I said, "You know, I was trying to put him in jail at the time." Not knowing that the U.S. attorney, Anton Valukas, in private practice, helped put this scrap deal together. And I figured that one out soon. So that was going nowhere. But he said, "You want a beer, kid?" And I go, "Yeah, sure, Eddie." And he's like, reach down there, he says to the bartender, "Reach down there and get him a cold one from the bottom." You know, there were cans in the cooler.
Right, right.
And you know what? That was those bartenders in the white short sleeve shirts. They were judges. Okay. So I know that stuff happens, right?
And they were judges?
Yeah. One was a judge who unfortunately had federal problem over a homicide case. Get into that. But the point being that, yeah, there is politics everywhere. But Mike Madigan, Richard J. Daley, the real one, real mayor, even Eddie Burke, other people like this, would never ham-handedly out in public do something like this to reveal themselves. If they wanted to get rid of a judge, they would have gone to that judge's friend, and that friend would get a talking to, and the judge might come, you know, in and say, "You know, I think it's time for me to retire." But they would never reveal themselves this way. This is just like stupid. Stupid with two O's. Stupid.
It's so stupid. It's so obvious. And anyway, you know, let's see. I mean, you guys predict for me what's going to happen in November in this election. Is Kim Fox going to get reelected?
Now, let's be clear. Judge Sheila O'Brien has endorsed her, not her brother, Judge Patrick O'Brien, for state's attorney, right?
Right, yes.
And yes, I still think that Kim Fox will be reelected because
really?
This is a blue state. This is a blue county. If Pat O'Brien wanted to take some really good advice, he'd call Tom Serafin and sit down and be at the crime scenes of every crime scene from now until election day, talking about who got off and who was on bond and who was on the bracelet and why the bracelet didn't work, and be sending out those videos. One thing that people should know is that my newspaper, the best newspaper around, the Chicago Tribune, and the editorial board, of which I'm a member, has an editorial in which Sheila O'Brien is referenced, quoted, I believe. And the basic message is, if you want to be defiant, if you want to defy the machine or the Preckwinkle machine, I called it the Preckwinkle Fox machine. What you do is you vote to retain Judge Michael Tooman. Do you think that'll happen?
I think so, yeah. I hope so. I mean, he's a wonderful judge. I do. I really do. I think that people, people will see through this. Also, it's a presidential election, so people will be probably more concerned with what's on top of the ballot than what's on the bottom. So I hope that plays for Judge Tooman's strength, because he is an excellent judge. He really is. And as I said, I didn't know him before I appeared in front of him, and I got to tell you, that is one well-prepared, hardworking judge. He really put me through the wringer, which is what, and not in a bad way. I'm not saying he was mean to me personally. He wanted to make sure that the Jussie Smollett case was litigated the right way. He was not easy. He was demanding and excellent. So we'll see. I hope people do vote to retain Mike Tooman. He's a rock star judge. He's the guy who judges go to when you want to talk about the law and can't figure something out. Mike Tooman's got an encyclopedic mind for the cases and the law. He's the guy you go to and say, talk to me, talk out loud. So Mike Tooman's a good guy, and he's a great judge. So please, people of Cook County, vote to retain Mike Tooman. He's really the real deal. He's a good judge. But we'll see. You know, everybody's looking at the top of this ticket, but they need to pay attention to the rest of the ticket as well.
Safety is at the top.
Safety is at the bottom.
You know, I mean, really, I'm not crazy about the president's personality, but I see all this stuff that the left does, like this thing with Tooman and just all the stuff they do. And I'm thinking, man, they're just not giving anybody a real choice. They're just forcing people there. But we'll see what happens. In the meantime, I guess... Sheila, you and I and Jeff should go to Bruna's for dinner.
Maybe we'll run into
Mike Madigan like I did the other day.
Amen to that. Thanks,
Amen.
George.
Thank you, Sheila O'Brien. Stay safe.
Thank you. Stay safe, John Cass, and stay brave. You know, speak truth to power. Have courage, everybody. Get out there and fight for your country. And that means go to the ballot box. That's the way civilians do it.
Bye, Judge.
Democracy in the house and the city. Vote,
raise up your hands. Jeff, this is a pleasure. And I'm really glad, Jeff, that you told me that WGN has fixed the issue with Apple, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and all the other platforms where people get the podcast. And if you like what you're listening to, tell your friends. Make this the best podcast in the city of Chicago. Make it the best podcast in the country, because everybody needs to know the Chicago way. For Jason Meisner, reporter at the Chicago Tribune, covering the federal building and all the ins and outs of the amazing federal investigation into wide-reaching corruption from Chicago to Springfield. For former Judge Sheila O'Brien, whose wisdom and optimism and ability to cut to the heart of the matter makes her probably the best guest we could ever have. From my friend Jeff Carlin, executive producer at WGN Radio. If you like what you hear, it's because Jeff makes it so. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, sitting on the back porch of the 3-flat with the planes flying overhead. I don't know why I moved here. I think I'm crazy. In Chicago, in the 3-flat.
For the scenery.
For the scenery, yeah, I'm looking at a straight brick wall behind it, an alley, and no garden here. What do I usually say? Syndicated columnist, the Chicago Tribune,
yep.
Member of its editorial board. Thanks for being here on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.